for the most exciting city in Europe in the 21st century. Dublin's only special interest radio station, Dublin City FM.
Hello, I'm Don Harris. Thanks to James for That's All Folk and Anthony Hall for the news. Each week on You and Your Business, I talk to the people and business owners who make small and medium-sized businesses work. And we ask our guests to talk about a book on business or a website that they like that was particularly helpful to them or could be to you. And they may give you some business advice along the way. And we ask them for any tips they can pass on for startup business owners. The email address for the show is business@dublincityfm.ie. If you'd like to get in touch. This week I'm delighted to be joined by Paul Davis of DavisBusinessConsultants.com. Paul, thanks very much for coming in.
Very welcome. Thank you, Tom.
Delighted to see you. Now, just to give our listeners a little bit of an idea, Paul is a leading, probably the leading business development and growth specialist in Ireland and has turned every loss-making business he's worked with into profit. Paul is known for being a classic lateral thinker. He has a strong commercial acumen and an exceptional ability to identify and deal with the bottlenecks of a business using down-to-earth approach. So that's very true. How does he do it? It's because he's the seventh son of a seventh with unique powers. Well, Paul, what can I say? Take us from there, and how did you become a consultant, and tell me what brought you to the place that you are now? How did it all come together for you?
Well, where do I start? I suppose when I was younger, when I left college, I wanted to find out, you know, what was my passion, what did I want to do, and try and figure out what kind of career path.
Like so many just at this time, and they're wondering about their future.
And I couldn't really decide as regards what exactly I wanted to do from a career point of view. So what I did was I started a trail of going around a lot of different companies. So I started off actually in revenue, in tax inspector's office, and was there for a year. And that was really kind of just feeling my feet from the point of view of what it was like to actually work in an office. Hmm. And then from there, I actually went into investment brokers, and then I moved into high-tech manufacturing. And then it was during that time...
Was there a bit of a thread there of a financial interest even in those days, or...?
There was at the start, because when I was in the investment brokers, I began to work closely with the financial director at that time, and he saw something within me that I obviously didn't see at the time, and he was kind of encouraging me then to maybe would I do some sort of accountancy qualification. So I started off actually doing accounting technician, because I said, look, it's only 2 years, I'll get it out of the way and get it done. And so that's what I did, and I moved from there basically then into high-tech manufacturing. And really through there was 26 accountants in the company itself, and they were mainly management accountants. And I remember my brother rang me one time. He said, look, Paul, you got to start picking a career. What are you going to do? So I think my parents were getting worried at the time. So I said, you know, management accountants were something that actually appealed to me. I liked the way they were actually looking at business. It was more forward thinking. It was more about budgets and costs and seeing how they can actually drive profits into the business itself. So what I decided to do was I set a goal that I wanted to get done in 4 years, which I did, passed the final exams, and I just moved from there.
So you really buckled down. I mean, to do that within 4 years was pretty good in those days, particularly.
Yeah, I think you've got to be quite disciplined in anything you go after. It's not just studies, it's not just, you know, whatever your career might be, but I think anything in life, you've got to be disciplined in what you want, and just go after it, hell for leather.
But at that stage, definitely there was something forming. You've got now the financial background. I presume you had been working with a number of companies through all that. And did you start getting interested in the people in the companies? Because now, of course, you're working with individuals very much as well as companies.
I was. And funny enough, what tended to happen was I started to move around all aspects of the company. So rather than just being stuck in the finance place, I was focused on trying to get into every single area of the company. So I ended up in marketing, I ended up in operations. And I went from there then into kind of construction, low-tech manufacturing. And then I ended up, my final position really as a career point of view was chief executive designate for a retail chain. We managed 60 retail stores around the country.
Wow.
And that was an amazing experience, I have to say.
Yes.
I absolutely loved it, but it's you learn a huge amount by doing it.
And at that time, were you formulating an idea in your mind that really you'd like to work for yourself, and all this experience that you'd now accumulated would be very useful in that regard?
I think I always wanted to set up my own business. One of my core values is freedom, and being in a full-time job, you don't have that flexibility of freedom of what I was actually craving for. So in the back of my mind, yeah, I was always aiming to try and set up my own business at some stage.
Do you feel you were particularly good academically at school, or, you know, did you struggle like so many through the Leaving Cert and then actually do extremely well afterwards, or, you know, where did you...
It's funny you should raise that. Thanks, Dan. I wasn't great at school. I personally, I actually didn't like school. I absolutely dreaded going to school every single day. Academically, I wasn't great at it. I remember doing honours subjects for the Leaving Cert, and then just when I went into the examination hall, I decided to do pass subjects, pass exams. I got A's and straight A's in the whole lot of them, but for me, it was just academia was not my forte.
It was not what you were going to do.
No,
you had already an idea.
Yeah.
So you then went, you did university, you did the accounting, you worked with the companies, chief executive designate. So at that stage, there was a point where you said, okay, now I can stay in the retail industry, potentially with this company, or maybe be headhunted elsewhere. It must have been at that point you said, no, do you know what? I think this is a good time for me to branch out.
It was a good time for me. I had done everything that I wanted to do with the company. I had completely turned it around, making significant profits for the company. And for me, I just wanted a new challenge. So I was there for a good number of years. And for me, I like moving things along, and I just wanted a new challenge. And at that point, between, you know, family life and what I was doing career wise, I said, look, now's the time to actually set up. So I did. I just took the plunge, and quite literally overnight I was out.
Wow.
Basically doing my own thing.
How long ago is that now?
I'm actually 11 years in business now on my own.
Right.
This year is actually ten years.
So 2001.
Yeah. 2011 is my 10th year, yeah.
Yeah, terrific, yeah. So an interesting time to do it, because you've been working with companies of various sizes through the good times, and now, of course, it's more difficult.
Yeah.
We don't talk about that in this programme. We only talk about the positivities that are out
exactly.
there, and the good things that come out of adversity. So how do you actually work with people and with companies now? How do David's business consultants actually engage with people?
I suppose what I would say is when I meet a business owner on the first occasion, I think this goes back to, you know, what I used to do as a kid, I can tell very quickly what needs to be done with the business. I'll have a chat with the business owner itself, and something inside me is able to tap into what their true passion is. And when I get them on the path of what their true passion is and get them to follow that, that's where miracles start to happen, in the sense of they really start to rock the boat from their business point of view. At the end of the day, 20% of it is all technique. You can go into a business and you can bring the techniques and the tools and the strategies and all that kind of sort of things, but the 80% is where the individual lies and where the individual is centered to key in for everything to do with the business. Following their passion, what motivates them and really gets them going.
And I think from what you were saying to me earlier, you help them to find out what their passion is maybe.
Absolutely.
And what they'll be very good at, and what maybe you excuse me, have discussions with them whereby you manage to get out of them really what's been in the back of their mind and to focus on chasing that dream to become a reality.
Yeah. Like you're exactly right, but you'll get an existing business whereby you've got to work with what you have, and you've got to work, make the business the best it can be. And profits is in the current environment, profits is key at the minute. Cash flow is absolutely king. So you can work on the mechanics, but primarily you've got to work on the people as well.
Yes. Well, that's so important to the whole business. Even if it's a small business of three people,
absolutely,
or it's a business of 50 people, it is the people.
It is.
The people are the business, and the business is the people. So the mix between working with chief executives and employees and maybe sole operators, how does that go in your work? Do you come across all types of companies nowadays?
I do, yeah. I suppose when I was working in one of the major companies, I used to be, you know, I never confined myself to the finance department. So I'd go around every single department, from the factory floor to operations to marketing. So what I developed at a young age was the ability to I suppose, talk to people at all different levels. So whether I'm talking to a chief executive and you're talking their language, or I'm talking to somebody on the factory floor, I can talk their language and fully understand where they're at. Mm. So it makes it easier for me to understand their job and what they're trying to do. At the end of the day, everybody wants a common goal.
Yes.
So it's getting that common goal within the company and getting everybody actually going after it.
Yes. When you first talk to a person, do you find that there is a sense of panic with them about what they're doing and they've lost their way? Or do you have to fight against them maybe going in the wrong direction? Are they very determined to go one direction? You're saying, I don't know about that. Maybe you should be going a different direction. Do you want to rethink this?
Or it's funny.
How does that go?
Yeah, it's kind of 50-50. You'll get 50% of the entrepreneurs that I'll be working with, and they will be they kind of resign to themselves the fact of I need help. I got to do something. Some people leave it to the last minute, and that's a lot more difficult to turn a company around. But the ones so half of them are kind of saying, look, I need some help here. Just tell me what I need to do, and just tell me what I need to do, and just do it. The other half are kind of saying, yeah, but they're hanging on to the way they used to do business and what they used to do. So it's a longer struggle. It can still be done, but when they do turn the corner and say they just get it, it's like as if the penny drops, and they actually just go after then.
Yes.
And seeing the difference. And for me, it's never about the money. For me, it's about the experience and seeing the difference in people and their businesses and getting them to turn the corner, following their absolute passion, loving exactly what they do, and just going after it.
And there must be a huge amount of satisfaction in your work now to see that happening before your eyes with companies, to understand the part that you played in bringing them forward.
Yeah, I never really bring it back to myself, to be honest. But at the end of the day, it's their company, it's their business. I'm perhaps maybe guiding them or mentoring them, but I'm giving them the techniques and the tools. But at the end of the day, it's their business, but it's brilliant to see. Like when somebody's business is completely transformed, but it's equally when they, as an individual, are completely transformed and living life the way it should be lived.
Yeah,
it's an amazing.
Now, I was going to ask you about that very point, because just earlier we were chatting, and it is about achieving that balance between work and living, isn't it?
I mean,
you can work and work and work, but it's not really living. It's a question of doing the job and not really having a life outside it. How do you see that?
I suppose, like, in the last couple of years, a lot of people were talking about trying to get a life balance, but I don't think they really fully understood the concept of it. For me, living is about getting every single experience out of life that you can possibly get out of life, and living life to the full. It's not just about a life balance. It's about, you know, you've only got so many years in this particular lifetime. You want to suck every single ounce out of this life as much as is possible, and try and gather as many experiences as you can possibly get. So yes, it's been driven within the business. It's been driven within your own family home, your relationships, whatever it might be. But also, what is it that actually you love to do?
Now, I know you bring a sense of discipline to the people that you work with as well, in terms of you set them goals or they set their own goals, and then you keep them to those goals so they don't get distracted and they keep focused. I mean, that's a really important part of turning companies around, isn't it?
It is. Like, I've worked with mentors myself, and without the mentors, I wouldn't have moved my business as quickly as what I've moved it. And I took on a mentor very, very early on in the days when I first set up my business. Even though it was a startup and even though money was tight, I knew I needed a mentor, because I knew I needed somebody to be accountable to in order to move me forward. I think it's important, you know, for business now at the moment, because at the end of the day, Don, it's extremely lonely being a business owner. For a lot of people, they don't know which way to turn and so on. So I think if you have somebody that's on your side as a cheerleader, it's a massive benefit to your business.
Definitely, because it's not easy to talk about your business to people outside of your business, because they may be suppliers and you don't want to talk to them because it shows outside your business. They may be even competitors. Yeah. You can talk to your family and you might say, my wife doesn't understand this, or she might say my husband has no idea what I'm doing. Yeah. So it is a question of finding somebody you can confide in that's not just a counsellor or a therapist, but somebody who talks business in the way that you understand business.
Yeah. I suppose the best way of looking at it is, you know, there's a shoulder to cry on when you need to. There's a listening ear whenever you need to. But there's somebody there to give you a good kick when you need it. Everybody else has vested interests. A good person looking after, whether it's a mentor or a coach or a business consultant, whoever it might be, for a business, they're there for you. They're there for the business owner.
Yeah.
And that's what's more important.
So, yeah, it's all about helping. It's not about knocking, although there might be criticism brought to bear because you feel strongly they may be going in slightly the wrong direction. But it is all about constructive advice and help
and
support.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we all have our own beliefs. We all have our own limiting beliefs.
Yeah.
We all have our things that hold us back. Until such times we have somebody to actually move us past that and get us.
And it's to recognise those things, isn't it? It's to understand there are things holding you back. You're not just imagining it. There are things that get in the way. So you have to try and get rid of those. I know in one place somebody used to name that person that was holding on their shoulder to keep them back. You know, I think they called him Sammy or something. Sammy's holding me back. And so you had to tell Sammy, get off. You know, I'm going to do this anyway.
Absolutely.
And there's a certain element of that, isn't it?
No, there is, yeah.
I know in sport they call it, so one of the books is The Inner Game, and you know, don't listen to that guy on your shoulder.
Do
what you want to do. Yeah. Okay, we're talking to Paul Davis of Davis Business Consultants. Paul's website is davisbusinessconsultants.com. It's well worth having a look. But for the moment, that's all we have in this segment. We're going to look at some business books. Great. Well, we've a couple of books to just flick through, you might say. Now, you could be forgiven for saying that Paul has, let's say, a reading list that is last century, but it's actually the previous century. So I'm going to give you the three titles to books. One is Acres of Diamonds by Russell Connell, and it was written in 1890. Paul, why are you still referring to a book that was written in 1890? Is it something about the fundamentals never change?
It's basically every single time you read that book, it's actually a speech that was done by Russell back in the early 1800s. But it's a speech that was delivered by him personally over 6,000 times. Wow. And was then converted into a book. And every single time you read the book, you get a completely different meaning from it. And I know a lot of people say that about a lot of books, but this particular one, especially for people that are facing difficulty in their business right now, it's a brilliant book to read, and it's a very, very short book. So you'll have it read in maximum an afternoon.
Well, I think the good news now about this, to anybody who might be listening and wanting to get a book that's written in 1890, is that they're all available from Paul's website. Excuse me. DavisBusinessConsultants.com. So that's Russell Connell, 1890, The Acres of Diamonds is the name of that book. Moving on in, well, I don't know what order, 1926, Richest Man in Babylon is the next book by George Samuel Classen. Tell us a bit about that one.
I think, well, the book, again, it's a very, very short book. I don't know whether it's my flavour to read short books as opposed to long books. But
it's short now. In the old days, it was about 360 pages. Are we talking 50 to 70 pages?
I think we're talking 50 to 70 in this one, you know. The book is written in a parable. And it's set in ancient Babylon, and really what it is, it's supposed the fundamentals. If you're looking, it's exactly what it says in the title, but the richest man. But it's the fundamental steps that you need to take if you want to create wealth. And a lot of people have taken that book and the concepts within the book and made it, in effect, their business. So, for example, Dr. John DeMartini will constantly refer to that particular book, and the principles that he teaches are exactly within the principles within the book. And basically what it is just a structure of how you can build wealth very, very simply.
Mm. Stick with the Principles. Yeah. Sounds very interesting. These are books I'm definitely going to go and look for myself. And the last one to talk, and the newest one, is written in 1937. Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. Also a Bible of sorts for business people.
It is what I would classify as being, it's a blueprint for business. It was written back in 1937 during the Great Depression. It was originally requested by Andrew Carnegie for Napoleon Hill to actually go and interview every single successful person at that time. So you're talking about, you know, Thomas Edison, Henry Ford, to name just but a few. And what he did was he interviewed every single successful person, found out what was it that made them a success, and compiled a whole lot then into a blueprint. And everything that's in the book as a blueprint is as relevant today, both from a personal point of view, but primarily for a business point of view. Mm. Everything is in the title, by the way. But there's an awful lot in that book, and it's one book that I actually take down off the shelf every single year, because again, there's other concepts that you won't come across in the first read. Mm. You have to constantly read and read and read again. But having said that, okay, it was originally published in 1937. However, it has been revised and updated, so it's a little bit of an easier read as it.
Interesting. You made a point that it was written, you know, in the midst of a depression, and here we are again. So very relevant to glance through the pages again and look at those fundamentals. Okay, well, look, that's three great books to have a look at. So just to repeat, written in 1926 was The Richest Man in Babylon by George Samuel Klassen. Acres of Diamonds was written in 1890 by Russell Connell. And finally, Think and Grow Rich was written in 1937 and revised several times since, and written by Napoleon Hill. So it's worth having a look for those. You can get them from Paul's website, davisbusinessconsultants.com, or I dare say you can order them off Amazon or other places as well, or possibly Eason or somebody might be able to track them down. I don't know, but it's well worth looking into getting those books. So that's all we have time for this part of the programme. We're going to talk about some business tips now that I think Paul has a good few of those. So that's all for this part of the programme. Right, so in the last section of the show, we talk about tips that we might be able to give to people who are considering going into business or are in business and considering what their next move, or perhaps just, to use that word again, panicking about what they should do now. When you talk to somebody who may be a stranger, it may be just in conversation, maybe at an event or something where you just bump into somebody and they zero in on the fact that you're a business consultant. Mm. How does that conversation go? Do they say, oh, Paul, have you anything to help me through? I've got to go to a meeting tomorrow. What sort of thing do you say to them?
I suppose the first thing is don't follow the money. Don't focus on the money whatsoever. And I know that sounds a bit contrary in today's climate, in the sense of, yeah, but like cash flow's tight and we can't get money from the banks and so on. It's not about focusing on the money. What it is focusing about how you can actually deliver massive, massive value for your clients and your customers. When you transfer your focus onto your clients and your customers, what is it that you can deliver for them, bring them absolutely massive value, more value than your competition? Then you're creating raving fans. Mm. It's as simple as that. So therefore, everybody will start to talk about your business. Everybody will want to refer business to you. And you stand out from the crowd.
Does it have to be a pleasant experience working? Or is it something you have to do to earn a living?
Well, a lot of people look at it that way, in the sense of, I've got to pay the bills, I've got to pay the mortgage, I've got to put food on the table. I've been there, believe me, when times are really, really tough. But having said that, what you got to do is, at the end of the day, I think more for business of the future, you've got to look at what is actually your passion, and you just really got to follow your passion. And even though it may seem that, you know, my passion might be completely separate to what my business is at the moment, you've really got to find out what that is, and you'd be surprised at how that could be turned into a business. Mm. And give you a lot more fulfilling life, to be quite frank. Another key element, I would say, is that you got to find out what your your core values are. One of mine happens to be freedom. I've got a few others. But what a lot of people do is they kind of tend to separate personal values from business values. And really in business, what you got to do is you got to merge the two of them together. They really have to be the essence of you. When the business is the essence of you, as in your core values, you're congruent with your authentic self, and that's where you're moving yourself forward as well as your business forward, and a hell of a lot easier.
We had a lady called Frances Jones on the program last week, and she also talked about making a good impression on people. Yeah. I mean, where does it sit with you in terms of always engaging with people and looking your best and dealing with people in your best? I mean, people want to deal with people who they admire by way of appearance and the way they're handled. Customer service is all part of that, isn't it?
Absolutely, and it's one of my bugbears. You go into any shop or you go into any restaurant or any place that's even a retail environment or an office, and maybe it's just because of the business that I'm in, but customer service, when I see bad customer service, I'm not surprised they're doing badly as a business. It's how you present yourself, it's how you engage with the customer. As simple as going into a retail shop and making eye contact and engaging in conversation, as opposed to just throwing the things at you and, you know, and even just sitting in the back of the counter, not even ignoring the customer.
I mean, and that's one of the dangers with nowadays social media and email and lots of ways of being in touch with people in a general mass way. We're perhaps losing the personal touch. So I know some call centres and large corporations are going back to the whole thing of having people answering the phone and not having push button, and people getting straight to the people to talk to, this interminable push button 1, 2, 3, select option 1, 2, 3. And it's really important to engage with your own customer base and not to forget who they are. They're not just numbers.
Yeah, that's right. But I think you're exactly right. There is a shift going back to, you know, what is actually more important, and it is about engaging in the customer and what difference you can make for them.
And that is the thing. What difference can you make for them? Because they're there to talk to you about finding that difference, isn't it? In your particular case. So in setting up a business, you've got to focus on the product and is there a market for the product, and then very much on the customers and giving real time to those customers and not just a cursory meeting now and again, but a real interest in their business, isn't it?
It is. The customer wants something. So whether it's a product, they want to benefit from the product. If it's a service, they want results. So what results are you going to give them? Can you guarantee the results? How much are you actually getting engaged with their business in order to move them forward? That's what it's all about, and making a difference for them in their life, in their businesses.
Yes.
No matter what you do. And then at the end of the day, as I said earlier on, what you'll have is you'll create a scenario where you've got raving fans about your business.
Even to use that old, gadget name, a widget, even if you're using a widget, it's got to be a widget that makes somebody's life easier or does the job very handily, that people want to say, I bought this great widget last week, you should get one too.
Well, Apple aren't about the product. Apple is about the emotion, about what the iPad can do, the iPhone can do.
Yes.
So it's creating an emotion within the actual customer itself. It's not about the product.
That's it. That's very true. And we all have seen Steve Jobs and he's having his own health problems. But even Apple is about one man and his team. As a friend of mine says, there's no I in team. Mm-hmm. It is about the team, and you've got to have a team around you to make your business successful.
Absolutely.
That's all we have time for today. I'd like to thank Paul Davis from Davis Business Consultants, whose website is davisbusinessconsultants.com. Thanks very much for coming along, Paul. You can contact the show by emailing business@dublincityfm.ie. The podcast is available on talkback.ie. For now, until next week at the same time, I hope you'll join me, Don Harris, for more about you and your business. Goodbye. Thanks for listening. News is next with Anthony, followed by the artist's space.